All right, this one goes out to Jeffrey Dahmer. Sorry you couldn't be here. Very proud of you. Jack's nuts roasting on an open fire. Now I'm nibbling on his nose. Thank you very much. My anticipation makes me start to perspire. Now his liver pate's on my toast. Everybody knows his pinky and his little toe are just fine when eating light. Sauteed flesh and two eyes in a bowl will be part of my snack tonight. Some people say that I am sick because I've eaten human eyeballs on a stick. And at one sitting I am gonna try to down a torso, a leg, and a thigh. And so I'm taking out my power saw to dice some heads for human stew. But there's one thing I know I'll never make: reservations for two. Give it up for Gacy on saxophone.
Hey, it's Chad Lambert, comic book writer and creator of Point Pleasant, the first ever Mothman comic book series, located at www.apebooks.com through Ape Entertainment. And you are listening to Ghostly Talk.
Whole crew here is all just going,
cower in the corner. Oh my gosh.
This is Ghostly Talk. I'm Scott Allen.
I'm Doug.
I'm Will.
And we are back with our great friend, our wonderful new friend, Amanda Dickerson, who's working on the Next Step research project. We've been talking about that, some of the things, the basis of it, what we know, what we're doing with this, what she's doing with this. I think I'm going to take part in this myself. What about you, Doug?
Well, I was wondering about that as well.
Well, we cut the poor girl off in the last segment.
I know.
Because we're heartless hosts. We don't care. we don't care about anybody. But, you know, having our own voices printed onto whatever digital medium we're using nowadays. But, Amanda,
how do participants participate?
Well, after you fill out the questionnaire at the site, what you're going to do, hopefully, is do an EVP session as you would normally do it, but you would pick a place that's not haunted, first of all, like, you know, in your home or, you know, office or wherever you think you're comfortable and you feel like it's your space. And then instead of saying, you know, I'm asking for a spirit to talk to me, you'll sort of make the affirmation, I'm trying to record my own thoughts here, you know.
Mm-hmm.
Nobody else talk, okay, it's just me. I'd like for people at the beginning of the tape, you know, to say it's such and such a date, it's such and such a time, I'm in my basement or wherever, mm-hmm. you know, I'm in the haunted studios.
Which, by the way, are not haunted. It's just part of the name of them.
As far as we know.
As far as we know, they're not haunted.
Yeah.
Right. And then, you know, I don't know how long people usually record for their EVP sessions, but mine are usually like between 7 and 15 minutes.
Okay.
And then when I started doing this for myself, I would try and, like, ask the questions like I was doing a regular EVP session. I'd be like, okay, you know, I'll ask, what's your name? and then I'll think the answer as if I was the ghost, you know, or the other person. But then I found out I was asking a lot of yes or no questions, and that could still be a ghost. You know, like you can't really say, well, that proved that was my thought because the ghost could have said no too, you know. So then I started picking like things like, okay, I'm going to think about, you know, my brother David, which is one of the EVPs you have. And then you think about that person so that if you get an EVP that says David, then you're like, okay, good. That was probably me, you know. You can kind of prove that it was. Go ahead.
And this is something that I've tried, actually, in the field. We'll be somewhere walking around or whatever doing a session, and I'll say something. I think I got it from some other person out there. Thank you, by the way. Where I just go, I'm thinking of a number. What is it? You know, just put them on the spot. I'm thinking of a number. What is it? Now I haven't been successful as far as recording goes, but I've tried that a bunch of times, and I think it's a pretty cool exercise to give it a shot. It sounds similar to what you're working on here.
Well, one thing I think might make a difference between whether people record EVPs or not is, are you mentally silent when you're silent for the tape? Like, are you, like, waiting for the ghost to talk and staying silent in your mind?
I always am.
Or are you thinking out loud, you know, it's two. It's the number two. You know, say two, you know.
I know I'm not.
I'm always.
I can't.
My mind is usually very still when I'm doing EVPs.
How do you do that? I can't do it. I've tried to, like, okay, Scott, relax. Think of the sea waves. Drool or do whatever you gotta do.
Drool?
Whatever.
Wow.
I can't ever get my mind to totally just go and so, just go quiet.
So you're always thinking about stuff. Like, you know.
It's just me.
Where did I put that receipt?
Exactly.
What did I do with the thing?
Did I make the house payment this month? Oh,
is everything locked? Is the iron on?
Yeah.
Blah, blah, blah.
Exactly. It's the stuff it's the OCD.
Yeah.
the official ninja-like OCD that I have, that's what my mind does all the time. I've tried. I've been working on it. I've gotten better, I'll say that, as far as silencing the mind and stuff like that goes. I'm working on it. Everything comes with practice, I think, when it comes to this kind of stuff. Are you able to silence your mind out like that too, Amanda?
Yeah. I meditate a lot, so I'm used to, you know, getting the stillness within.
Mm-hmm.
And when I first started trying to capture ghost EVPs, I would be very silent in my mind, and I wasn't getting anything. And I complained about it on one of these, I think it was on your discussion board. I was like, I'm not getting any EVPs. But he said, well, are you, like, having that intention? You need to really think, you know, I want the ghost to speak into the recorder.
Mm-hmm.
And I found that so odd. That was one of the first things that got me thinking about the PK EVPs,
mm-hmm.
was because it shouldn't matter, you know, for the ghost, what I was, if I cared, you know, like, if you're going out to record bird song, you don't need to go, I really want to record bird song. It will just happen.
Because either the bird is singing or not. Yeah.
Right. It doesn't care what your intention is. So I thought that was interesting that seems to be what some people like have as their suggestion to record an EVP, is that it matters what their, you know, mindset is.
Mm-hmm.
Which, you know, might mean that they're actually affecting their own EVP recordings, because I don't know if they're giving the energy to the ghost, or if, you know, in some cases I think that might be the case, or if they're, you know, sending the energy into the recorder themselves, you know, thinking what the ghost would have said. You know,
mm-hmm.
like, if they know, you know, such and such person died here in the Civil War, you know, whatever,
mm-hmm.
and then they're like, okay, you know, what's your name? And they know the name is, you know, Captain Morgan or whatever. And they're thinking that. And then the recorder says, you get Captain Morgan on the recorder, they might say, ah, see, I knew he was going to be here, and I caught him, you know, as opposed to that actually was their thought that they caught, you know.
Mm-hmm. Well, what's interesting is one of the theories that I've heard over and over and over, because we've been doing this for a while, is everybody is connected somehow,
mm-hmm.
right?
Mm-hmm.
And whether it's the, you know, Jung's universal consciousness or whatever,
mm-hmm.
or some kind of matrix, or, you know, I've heard it called many, many things,
mm-hmm.
but we're all connected, and we're all connected even then. You can extend that through Paulino into multiple dimensions.
Mm-hmm.
We're all connected,
yeah, yeah.
somehow, some way, some way we can't touch or feel or know,
mm-hmm.
but we're all connected. Because the theory is we're all part of the, you know, the spark of life, whatever that is,
mm-hmm.
And a lot of people, you know, then get all religious about it. You know, we're all part of God. Okay? So, which is fine, but I don't care, you know, but the thing is, we're all part of it, right? So we're all interconnected. So perhaps when you have an intention, you're playing on the interconnectedness of us.
Mm.
I don't know.
Possibly.
That's just a theory that I thought I'd throw out. What, well, and another thing, because we've only got minutes left, unfortunately, because we want to talk about the history real quick, and then we want to talk about...
Oh, God, yeah. Yeah, we're killing this.
We want to actually listen to some things that you're studying, right?
Mm-hmm.
So what about the history?
I have been in contact with Tom Butler from the American Association of Electronic Voice Phenomena.
Oh, yes.
We have spoken with Tom and Lisa Butler. Yes.
Mm-hmm.
And he was kind enough to send me an article that they actually published for their group, where they looked at recording of the thoughts of the living. And one of the they actually listed several notices that people had sent them, that they were like, you know, this is a possibility that they're actually recording thoughts as opposed to, ghost voices. And they had a fellow whose name was Jacques Blanc-Garin from France, who actually did an experiment with people who were asleep.
Mm-hmm.
And he would, according to his little notice here, that he would call people like his wife and friends that he had made agreements with ahead of time when they were sleeping, and he would receive messages that he thought was proof that that was their thoughts, that they might be like, in his theory, they were coming out of their body and speaking to him from out of their body, but
mm-hmm.
They were thoughts supposedly from the living. And one EVP recorded was, he thought it was from his wife that said, "I'm in the air, Monique," where she said her own name, to sort of sign her EVP, I guess.
Yeah.
And that someone else, her parents had, they recorded the EVP they thought was from her parents, that they'd asked the question, "Do you meet your family on the other side?" And the answer was, "I meet all, but I will come to you because I love you." And then they said her nickname, which is like in French and I can't pronounce it. So that was like one person. And then one of the other ones was like Brian Jones from Washington, said that he was recording an EVP session when he was talking on the phone. And at the same time he was talking on the phone, he was recording EVPs that he thought was the thoughts of his friend
mm-hmm.
that he was talking to on the phone.
Oh, my God.
What he thought that person would be thinking was what he was recording.
Mm.
And actually, from one of your episodes, the October 24th of 2004, you had Russell White from Goulion.
Oh, yeah.
Oh, yeah.
That was exciting.
Yeah. He mentioned that he thought that he'd recorded his thoughts on tape before.
Mm-hmm.
So this is, I'm not the first person to bring this, suggestion forward. But I'm trying to coordinate a big enough effort that we can actually get, some kind of information from it. So after people record their EVPs, even if they, or EVP sessions, even if they don't record an EVP, still send those in because that's still significant.
Yeah.
If we only get the four EVPs that actually got recorded sent in, we'll think, oh, everybody who tried got an EVP. Well, yay. We're actually, 100 other people tried and didn't get anything and then didn't send it. So, we're not seeing, the full picture.
Mm.
So if a participant sets up the scenes or sets up the experiment.
Mm. Well, they fill out the
fill out the application.
Yeah.
Sets up an experiment,
mm-hmm.
Or maybe they do it once a week for 6 weeks. Maybe
mm-hmm.
they do it once a day for 10 days. Whatever.
Mm-hmm.
Send in all of your data.
Yeah.
Right.
How now, as far as data is concerned, is there any means? Are you just going to work on email with this? As far as sending stuff over on email.
That or actual snail mail. There's the snail mail address on the
okay.
website.
All right. Yeah, some
you
people
just
like,
burn all your stuff to CD.
Yeah, burn to a disk and mail it off. Yeah.
Yeah.
That'd be probably an easier way to do it if you have a lot of stuff.
Yeah, that's mm-hmm. true. If you do 10 experiments, you might want to just...
You're not blessed.
I want people to listen to their own session, too, and then let me know if they heard anything or not,
mm-hmm.
So that I'm not thinking that I heard something when actually they whispered something to themselves.
Yeah.
Right.
They know it wasn't an EVP, but I don't know.
Oh, that was my stomach grumbling or whatever. Yeah.
Right.
Well, another thing, have you ever read up on this fellow? And I don't know his name, and I probably should because I'm a host of a paranormal internet talk show, but I never remember these things when I want to know.
Yeah.
You know.
Oh, I'm the same way.
There's this fellow back in time. I don't know when exactly, but it was probably 20 years ago or something. This fellow was running around, and he could actually evidently produce images on video and cameras.
I know exactly who you're talking about, but you know what?
What?
I don't know his name either.
Oh, good. At least it's not just me.
Yeah.
Same here. I saw that.
There was a fellow who would walk up to a cameraman or something, and the clip that I saw was him walking up to a cameraman on the street of Chicago, I believe it was, and he just grabs the camera with his hands, and he scrunches up his face, and I don't remember if he puts his forehead against the camera or not, but he grabs the camera, and this was a video camera, and grabs this camera, I think it was a video camera, grabs it with his hands and scrunches up his face, and then sort of looks dazed and amazed and stumbles backwards a bit, right? They review the film or the picture. I don't remember exactly, but and it had this scene on it that was not of downtown Chicago. I mean, I don't remember what it was, but it was not what was being recorded. It was completely different.
Huh.
Now, how can you affect a camera that way with your mind? You know, I mean, and of course everybody says, oh, he's a hoax, or oh, he's not, or whatever. I'm just still amazed that, first of all, if you're a hoax, it's an amazing hoax. Quite cool. And how could you affect something that way? Because obviously he didn't purchase that camera. Some movie studio or something did, you know. But that might be an interesting thing. I think what I'll do is I'll read up on that fellow and
talk more about it.
Yeah, I'll learn something.
I'll learn something about that.
Speaking of learning something, why don't we check out the things that you're checking out?
What do we have on the list there, Will?
First one is called No.
No.
Yeah.
All right. Why don't you give us a little What do you mean? No, I don't want to do this thing, man.
This is one of the early ones I was doing. I was thinking questions that I was been trying to answer with myself mentally.
Mm-hmm.
And the question, I think it's even on the recording, is I asked, "Do you have any kids?" And then I was thinking, no. And then, like, on the recording, you at least I think you hear no.
Okay. Let's give it a listen.
Let's
hang
see
tight.
What happens.
Do you have any children?
Hear it again.
Can she hear that? Is that?
Can you hear this? Yeah, let's
post it out to her. Yeah,
let's put her in the mix.
Post it out to you.
Do you have any children?
Hear that right at the end?
Right at the end. That.
A huffy.
It's like it makes it out of the background noise.
Kind of, yeah. Were you using any type of background noise?
No. Well, I was in a kitchen, and the refrigerator was humming. So it wasn't on purpose. I couldn't hear the refrigerator humming. Until I got
right.
Let's hit it one more time, just to get it out there.
Do you have any children?
You hear that right on the end. That,
interesting.
Yeah.
And actually, that's a repeat of a question when I was trying to do my EVP recordings before, when I was actually trying to get a ghost, and I was using the intention of getting the ghost. I had asked the question, "Do you have any kids?" So this is like a repeat of that question. And then when you really cleaned it up and listened to it, and it's like almost impossible to hear, which is why I didn't send it, you can hear in the background, "I don't have any kids." Like, so digitized that it wasn't even worth sending. But
yeah.
That was one of the first things that made me think, because I was sitting here thinking at the time, if someone asked me, I'd say, "I don't have any kids." So I was like, wait a minute, you know, that's interesting. We should look into that, you know.
Definitely. What do we have next on the list here, Will?
Dave William.
Dave William.
Yeah, I think I sent two. One's like a slightly clearer version.
Yeah, well, you got two of them up there?
I got both of them, yeah.
You got both of them?
Yeah.
Why don't we listen? Let's hear,
I say, I'm going to think of my brother Dave. And a lot of times when I was trying to think of him, I was thinking if I was yelling at him across the room, you know, like thinking loudly that way.
Okay.
You know, and when I talk to him, half the time I call him David William because his middle name is William.
Mm-hmm.
So when I was thinking, I was thinking Dave and Dave William. And, you know, so when you hear the recording, I'll say, "I'm thinking of my brother Dave." And you'll have like a period of silence. And then there's like some mumbling sounds right before you'll hear sort of a fast version of Dave Williams.
Okay.
Yeah.
Yeah. Is just a clean one?
We'll do the first one, then we'll do the clean one.
Okay, all right.
Okay.
I'm going to take my brother's name, Dave.
Mm-hmm. Something that came out, yeah.
What was going on in the house at that time?
I was actually at work
kitchen. Okay.
All by myself. Pick the day the boss wasn't in. So I was all by myself at work, and I don't know what your question was.
So there's no people, like, in the room or even in the hallway outside the kitchen?
No. I'm in the whole section all by myself.
And you heard nothing?
Nothing at the time, no.
Let's play that. Let's play the clear version.
Clear version?
Yeah.
Clear version.
I'm going to take my brother's name, Dave.
You're like, oh, yeah. William?
On that one, you can hear the mumbling a little bit better.
Mm-hmm.
And I tend to get a lot of mumbling when I try and get the PK EVPs.
Mm-hmm.
Where I wouldn't have before when I was trying to stay quiet for the ghost.
Mm-hmm.
So I'm suspecting that we might get a lot of unintelligible mumbling, because that's what I'm getting a lot of.
Okay.
And that was one of the few that actually had...
Well, that's why I asked who was around, because there's definitely, in both the clear and the normal, there's definitely noises.
Mm-hmm.
Right, but they weren't there... Like in life, you know, when I was recording, I couldn't hear anything.
And I'm trying to picture, like, myself in the kitchen at my work, right? Although we don't really have a kitchen, but I'm trying to picture myself in, you know, a quiet area at my work with nobody else there, and what I would hear.
Mm-hmm.
And I don't think I would hear mumbling.
Not really, no. Not well, as far as recorders, you have to take the recorder into account also, too. I mean, the recorder, depending on what model you have, what type you have, it's going to be a lot more sensitive. I don't know how much mumbling you pick up like that, though. But I'm hearing what you picked up. Mm-hmm. I'm hearing this Dave Williams. But it's mumbled. That's the thing. It's kind of hard to make out. But
mm-hmm.
Most of these aren't very easy to make out.
Well, they're not, but they're fascinating because it's leaning toward a support to the hypothesis.
Absolutely. there's one more on there, isn't there?
All right, let's see what the other one is.
What's the other one?
It's like really, I can't even understand what it says.
It's called unclear.
Oh, it's called unclear.
Okay.
Okay.
I was unclear what it's supposed to say, but it's actually the loudest one I got.
Okay.
We'll check it out.
It's very short.
Very short. All right, let's try it one more time. One more time.
Okay.
Sounds like my stomach in the morning.
The closest I can think of is it sounds like it says something like luge, but a friend of mine says it sounds like the end of, like, hello, like they missed the H part, like it was like, hello.
Okay.
Know, I'm not sure that's...
Let's try it one more time.
To me it sounds two syllables, but...
Yeah.
Let's do it one more time.
It's loud. It's a lot louder.
Yeah.
But it's very hard to make out. Well, hopefully...
Do you remember what you were thinking at the time?
I was actually at the end of the recording session, and I was, like, getting kind of tired and frustrated. So I was like, I'm just going to think a bunch of stuff. So I don't even know what it was. I was thinking, hello, goodbye, you know, I'm tired, or, you know, I was coming off of a cold, so I was like, I have an earache. I was thinking about love.
Well, I tell you what, Amanda, this sounds like a really, really cool project that you're doing right now. And what I want all of our listeners to do, you're... server's going to take a beating, I think.
I hope so.
I want everybody to get behind her on this. Let's try this thing and help Amanda out on her project. I'm going to do it. Tomorrow, when I have a few minutes, I'm going to go and fill out the form. And we do EVP all the time, so I think it'd be very simple to burn some CDs for you and send them down there to you. So I want to see everybody else try that, too. Amanda, I think you're doing some really cool work here. Thanks for coming on the show, too, by the way.
Thank you.
This is a very interesting project. This is really starting to dig in deeper, you know, not just like, let's go out and record stuff. I mean, let's start thinking about what we're doing here. It sounds like that's what you guys are doing, Amanda. So congratulations. It's very cool to see you get this thing going, and we wish you all the luck, and we'll be talking to you again very soon.
Yeah, I want to know more as it progresses, the different things you're finding and things like that. And if you get some really remarkable things, which I hope do, mm-hmm. Ask them if you can play them. Us, for everybody on the Ghostly Talk Show, because I'd love to get knowledge of this project and results out there, if possible, because this sounds like a serious, and I'm very impressed, it's a serious research effort.
Definitely. Amanda, thank you. We'll talk to you soon, okay?
Okay.
Have a good night.
Thanks,
Amanda. We'll see you.
Okay. Bye.
That's what I like, though, is that there's somebody that's really out there thinking. Like, there's a lot of people that are out there doing stuff like this.
Right.
And one different, maybe a different shape, different color, whatever it may be. But there are a lot of people doing projects like this, and I really like to see people help Amanda out. And I just think it
Ghost Hunter's asking if you can send in digital files, and yes, of course.
Yeah. They are digital, aren't they?
Yes.
They're going to send you a box of tape.
So, because she was saying that you could submit a couple of different ways.
Well, yeah, there's a snail mail address. That she has on her website, or if it's a small enough file, possibly. I don't really know. I don't know the specifics of her email setup, but most email accounts, you can only really move maybe 1 or 2 megs before it says, no, we're not sending it. Goodbye. It comes back to you. Mail return, undeliverable.
So, but it's only 15 minutes, so if you MP3 it, or OGG.
The thing I'm worried about that, though,
OGG's
actually better than MP3
as
far as quality goes. That's the one thing I've been concerned about, too, as far as, I mean, I like dealing with original captures myself.
The wave.
I mean, I like, well, even the MP3. If this is the original capture of this MP3, that's cool.
Right.
When you start encoding down from wave to MP3, you start losing bits right there. And that's what I don't like. I like to deal with the source file.
Lossy compression.
Exactly. Yeah. I like the source file myself. So, yeah, check it out, though, definitely. It's something I'm going to take part in, I think. I was thinking about that this week when I talked to Amanda, and I'm going to take part in it. It was really cool to talk to her. But, hey, you know what?
I know. I'm excited.
I got to go to the bathroom.
Oh, I'm not excited about that. But I am excited about the next guest.
Yeah.
And the amazing Kreskin.
All right, we'll be right back. We're going to have the amazing Kreskin on after this break.
Excellent.
Woo-hoo! Hey, this is Russell White with Ghouli.com. That's www.ghouli.com. And with Ghost Magazine, you're listening to Ghostly Talk Radio.
I have been anxiously awaiting.
He's been biting his nails since he started the show.
I have. I have been anxiously awaiting, so I'm just going to read this thing as fast as possible.
Okay.
To get...
Which you're holding in your little bloody stump fingers right, right now. You fit them down to the bone.
Well, you pass this over to me because I want to get through this part quickly. Mm-hmm. With a showman's flair, a comedian's wit, and capacities of a bona fide mentalist, the amazing Kreskin has, for over five decades, dramatized the unique facets of the human mind. During his teens, he was nationally recognized as the world's youngest hypnotist, allowing him to collaborate in psychological... clinical studies existing in the realm of parapsychology and the power of suggestion. With a hectic schedule of over 300 appearances a year worldwide, Kreskin is constantly challenging the impossible with amazing results. Kreskin is currently writing his... Well, that's probably not current, but when this was written, Kreskin was currently writing his 13th book, his long-awaited and anticipated memoirs. Kreskin is also a voracious reader, capable of consuming an average novel in less than 15 minutes,
man,
with remarkable retention. In fact, in certain casinos, he is banned from the card tables, not, they say, because of his mind-reading skills, but because of Kreskin's ability to memorize four decks of cards at once. And yes, that would get you banned.
That would get you banned very quick.
I would like to welcome... An excited Doug, co-host of Ghostly Talk.
He's is jumping in the seat right now.
Very excited to welcome Kreskin to Ghostly Talk. Welcome.
Oh, Scott and Doug. Listen, I got to tell you, I'm sitting here in my office right now. I'm only home about 4 days a month, and I'm listening to this introduction, and I got to tell you something. If I ever get depressed, or I ever get down the dumps and I need a spark, I'm going to have you guys introduce me. It almost sounds like I passed away. I'm attending memorial service. That was dramatic. And you guys are out in Michigan?
Yes, sir.
We are.
Yes.
You're in are you Detroit area?
In the
right
Detroit area.
Out, yeah, right. I mean,
that's ironic because in a few days I'm going to be in, have you ever heard of a town in Michigan called Mount Pleasant?
Oh, yeah.
Of course.
Yeah, I'm going to be there at a... I guess I'm performing at a casino called Soaring Eagle Casino.
The Soaring Eagle Casino,
yeah.
Yes.
That's on the 19th. So, you know, it's a small world. I say this to people as I travel. Guys, if you ever want to hide, don't do it on Earth. Because that's the day you're going to be walking down. You know, my perfect example of this is I was on a few years ago, I was on a show with an actor. We'll mention it right now, and he was a guest, and I read his thoughts, and he was very, very, very enthusiastic. And a few days later, I'm performing in Rome, Italy, and I'm sitting down at the piazza because at night you people go to bed late. And we were walking around and sat and had a glass of wine. I said, "Gee, that looks like so and so." That can't be. This is 3 days later. Couldn't be him. And he nodded. I nodded. He was with this elderly lady. Mm-hmm. Finally, comes over and says, Kreskin, I just took my mother on vacation to Italy. It's nice to see you after 3 days. So you really never know anymore. You got to be careful.
Oh, yeah.
But I almost want to interview you guys. What a great idea for a show. You you search into ghostly happenings and everything related, the paranormal, is that what it is?
Yes, sir.
Yes, we do.
Yeah.
And
yeah.
How long have you been doing the show?
Wow, we're going to have our fourth anniversary in,
February technically is our 4-year anniversary.
Technically, we'll be doing it for 4 years, but we always have our anniversary show in March. Mm-hmm. So.
In March. Yeah. Well, you know, if I'm around or accessible, even on the cell phone, I'll have to call you on the anniversary show because I always like to celebrate things like that. When I say from around, I said I'm only home about 4 days a month. As mm-hmm. as of about 3 months ago, the airline industry announced that I've now flown, so far in my career, 3 million miles.
Oh, my God.
Yeah, last year I was performing in Spain, Italy, New Zealand, Australia, Japan, mm-hmm. Wales, Netherlands, Canada, and the United States, even in a foreign country called New Jersey. I say that jokingly because that's where I'm living. But I'm always on the road. And as I say to audiences, it's as crazy as it is the safest time to fly because there really is strong security, but it is so frustrating. I'm going to predict that when I make predictions around the first of the year that in about a year or so, the airline industry is going to be forced to insist that when you take a flight, you got to be at the airport 2.5 days ahead of time. It's getting crazy.
It's getting to be that way.
It's getting to be that way.
But I know you have questions, and I should tell you what the questions are, but right now I got to ask you something. Have either of you had a ghost-like experience? Because I've asked this thousands of times for not only celebrities, but private individuals around the world. Have either of you had anything like that?
Well, actually, I have. I'm Doug, and I've had I saw one ghost once, and even though I'm a ghost hunter, right, and I'm out and about, I go to cemeteries. I don't like those as much, but I go to.
Can I ask you? When you say you don't like them as much, why do you feel that way?
My favorite haunts, my favorite places to investigate, are public places. Either roads that have a ghostly legend attached to them or train tracks that have a ghostly legend attached to them.
Mm-hmm.
Places where anybody can be. And it could be your grandmother, it could be, you know, your aunt, your mom, your daughter, it could be anybody. It could be your school teacher. I mean, it could be anybody.
Mm-hmm.
Driving along the road and has a ghostly experience. And something about the public haunt really attracts me.
That's intriguing. Now, I've always had, I've been interested in the phenomenon, of course, I spent my life involved, and I can tell you some people that would ring bells to you that I've gotten to know through the years. And as far as ever communicating with a ghost, I've never had that or seen that. But I have to say, and more and more through the years, there is no question that houses and certain rooms do have a presence, a mood, almost something about it, you know, and very often it's something in which a very crisis-like occurrence took place or a tragic occurrence, but there's just no question. You can travel the world and you can walk through houses. Years ago, in Nyack, New York, this interesting story.
Mm-hmm.
There was a house that was up for sale and, the family lived just a few buildings away from an old-time actress who died a few years ago. Her name was Helen Hayes. This is in Nyack, New York, which is really not far from New York City. Standing in Nyack, you can actually see, I believe it's the George Washington Bridge. I'm not quite sure, but you can see a lot of New York scene. So anyway, and I've been there a number of times because we can talk about it maybe later on, but a couple of years ago, the Learning Channel came to me and did a whole week on UFOs, and they had me as a consultant for the first and for the second day. That's a whole separate story. But anyway, going back to this incident, this was a house that had an ominousness about it, kind of a history of hauntings, and I was performing in Atlantic City, and my road manager saw the story and called me on the phone and said, Kreskin, what do you think? I said, well, I close and next week. Let's hurry out there. So I went out there, got a tremendous amount of press coverage, but I walked through the house, and I stopped in different sections of the house, and the lady who owned it, who's on years, said that that's where sightings took place. That's where her son and a couple of other people had experiences. They unsettled them and so forth. So to me, there was kind of a presence. But there is a there's an interesting story, and this maybe reflects human nature as well.
Mm-hmm.
I was very interested possibly in buying the house. I thought, well, maybe if I don't live there, I can turn it into something of a museum with people who actually live there, with people put on tours and talk about and then have some memorabilia, what
mm-hmm.
have you. And we decided to have some kind of a seance there. Indeed, believe it or not, Howard Stern decided he was going to attend, which, of course, would have been a wild seance, even if there were no ghosts that night. But anyway.
No kidding, yeah.
So I said, Howard, that's fine, you and Rumpkin. Well, anyway, and I brought the lady on a number of shows, network shows, CBS News, what have you. And then, can you believe it or not, this is a warning, folks, to somehow how our values can change. Suddenly, we get a week or 10 days before a message that a relative of this lady's family, I'm not going to say it's her son or son-in-law, I'm not going to say anything, decided, well, yeah, you can have the seance, but each of the press have to pay something like $1,500 to attend. Well, guys, I mean, Scott and Doug, you just don't do things like that.
No, you don't. No, you don't.
Sanity, and it doesn't even make sense because the press doesn't pay to attend things, and if anything, it could create greater interest in the whole story. Well, that turned me off, and I stepped down, and I said to the lady, I said, you know, many people have only 15 minutes of fame and then wonder what in the world happened. And everyone backed away, and Howard and I, we all decided no seance, and the press was angry, of course.
Mm-hmm.
And that was the end of that, and of course it was forgotten.
Mm-hmm.
Well, the house was finally sold, but what is fascinating about this is some months later, a lawsuit took place, and the new family who bought the home, who had, I believe, they had two children, sued the lady who had retired now and moved to Florida and demanded their money back because they said she had not told them that the house was haunted and they were having manifestations. And guys, I can only tell you this, Scott and Doug, it is, to the best of my knowledge, at least in the last century, the only time where a court trial took place in New York and she had to give the money back because she hadn't told them of the hauntings. So it's fascinating. She finally did sell the house and move on. But isn't it interesting how even ghosts enter the courtroom?
Yeah. Mm, oh, yeah.
And we've heard that before.
We've talked about that numerous times on this show.
Several states now, you have to disclose if
yeah.
you think your house is haunted or not.
And, you know, of course, I would love to have my house haunted because I always say this slightly tongue-in-cheek. I've never really heard of a ghost that hurt anybody. People hurt people. Ghosts may be scary or intriguing, but I don't think they really, I mean, what are they going to do, right? They hit me, it's going to go right through my body out
right.
to the other side.
Right.
And it would be interesting. And I have, of course, even though I'm known as a mentalist and a thought reader, but my work has taken me everywhere. And for Inside Edition and other TV shows, we've gone to haunted areas. And there is a library in Bernardville, New Jersey, that had originally been a bar, a tavern, in the around the Civil War and the Revolutionary War and so forth. And we had decided for Inside Edition to hold a seance there. And but what was interesting is that it had a very ominous story, which you may have also discussed. But it turns out the tavern barmaiden at that time was in love with a gentleman during. I believe it was the Revolutionary War. I'm just not even sure quite what the details. I have to look it up. But anyway, and it turns out, unbeknownst to her, he was found to be a spy. I guess he was put away, and for some unforeseen reason, the body was brought in a small trunk and left in the tavern, unbeknownst to most anybody except a few people. And she happened to be working one day soon after, opened it and saw her lover and the person she was married, and of course just went out of her mind, and it was this tragic thing. So we held, you know, a seance there many decades, a century ago, what have you,
mm-hmm.
just a few years ago. And don't you know, some people were in the library, and one of the officials there came over to the Inside Edition camera crew and said, "We got to talk to Kreskin." I said, "What's going on?" And the librarian said, "Mr. Kreskin, a young man, I think, fellas, he was only like maybe 9, 10, 11 years old, a young man saw a form in the opposite corner of the library. They hadn't closed it down just yet because they were just laying out all the camera work, so there were still people in the library. And she says, I want you to describe this form to this person. And here, what this young man had seen was a reasonable fact of the image of the person that had been put away. So, you know, who knows what in the world happened. On the other side of the coin, and I could tell you hundreds of stories around the world, but on the other side, if I can smile now, some years ago we had a seance in a place called the Eddy House, which is in New Hampshire, and there were some spirit mediums who were not too honest or legitimate at that time, but they were in the turn of the century and in the early 1900s, and they had this house, and I was with a man who was a legendary authority, not only on Houdini, but on paranormal, and also created a character in radio that was used in radio called The Shadow years ago, and he was a writer. His name was Walter B. Gibson, and he was a remarkable, he's gone now, but one of the great cherished friends of my life, and endless stories. And he was a newspaper man, but he was an authority on Houdini and knew him well, and also a great authority. And his wife, Lipska Raymond, was a palmist from Europe, a wonderful person. There's a whole other story I could tell you. So we're having this seance, and there's writers there, and you know, this is in New Hampshire. Now, I was just in New Hampshire weekends ago at a theater, but this was kind of in a more remote area.
Mm-hmm.
And we're sitting in the dark, and suddenly, guys, I almost jumped out of my chair, and not too much scares me, but this red light started moving around the room, and suddenly said, my God, what's going on? Here outside the house in the middle of nowhere, a police guard stopped a guy from speeding, and there was the red light that was going on.
Oh, my God.
So sometimes things are not all I can tell you, Scott and Doug, sometimes things are not only always ghosts, but it is one of the most dramatic seances I ever held in my life was at a place in Washington, D.C., that's called the Octagon House. And this is very, very old. It's I don't know even if it's a national site today, but it's got legends around it. Part of the legend is that I don't know if it's extramarital affair, but some scandal took place, and a woman was found at the bottom of the staircase, thrown down the stairs or what have you, and there was some traumatic death. So we held a seance there, and it was by candlelight, and we must have had, oh my God, 48 or 52 some people. There were different tables, and we were sitting there. And at the end of the whole thing, suddenly, I cannot tell you how many people jumped up from their tables, almost knocked over the table, screamed, and saw this woman falling down the stairs, screaming, agonizing pain, and at the bottom, and of course when the lights were totally brought up, there was no one there. But we had quite a number of people who were extraordinarily shaken, so whether it was a hallucinatory factor or a presence that we did not know about, it, of course it certainly made it memorable. And you guys can tell that I savor it. I'm sure, like you guys, one of my favorite holidays of the year is still Halloween, guys.
Oh, yeah, absolutely.
Did you hear what happened in New York on October 28th with me around the Halloween period?
No, what happened?
Well, I held I'm always traveling, and I'm performing, and off-Broadway I had a concert which, in fact, it ran the night this happened, it ran the show length of I was on stage 2 hours and 21 minutes, as a matter of fact. So it's a full-length show, and it had been in a lot of the papers and discussed on TV that I was going to, on that night, cause fear and horror beyond any experience that those participating on stage would ever have had. And at the same time, I quickly abridged it by saying, listen, no one's going to be harmed, but it will be their most memorable, frightening experience. Well, that's a tall order. You can see horror. There's some great horror movies, and I'm a great aficionado of gothic horror stories. You could have had experience in life and what have you.
Mm-hmm.
So we had, it was the evening of my concert. As a matter of fact, I was very flattered. A lot of people in the media came. Nicolas Cage flew in with his, brought his father and Steele from Paramount because he'd been a fan, but he didn't volunteer on stage. Maybe he got a little bit scared of them. So I asked for volunteers, and I was demonstrating the power of suggestion, how, as I've shown all over the world in performances, not only at theaters and universities, but state fairs, what have you, how without any kind of trance it's possible to create dramatic responses to the power of suggestion. So we had people on stage, and I said to them, those of you who are, I want you to assure me that you're not afraid of being frightened. Now think about that remark. One of the conditions was that they would not be afraid of being frightened. And that quote of mine was used in papers all over New York in the days up to the show. So about a dozen of all the people who were on stage stood up and stood there, and I said, you know, let me sit down at the piano and play. And I do play the piano in my program. People who enjoy it usually had hearing problems. No, but I love music. And I played with the New York Pops and the New London Philharmonic and what have you. A lot of people don't know about it unless they see me in person. So I played a song that was a theme song of a movie that came out in the 1940s. And I'll tell you something, Scott and Doug. I know a lot of people in the movie industry, and I think some of the very best movies for moods are black and white. And this is not because I'm living in the past, but black and whites are shades. You can have shades, you can have shadows, which is very difficult to address in color, as I'm sure a lot of the people listening in who are movie buffs know. You can't really photograph nighttime. You have to use filters and everything else.
Mm-hmm.
So some of the finest gothic horror stories have been in black and white. It should stay that way. Listen, Alfred Hitchcock fought and said, nope, Psycho will be in black and white, and that's the way it was. It would have been stupid in color. It would have been a slasher movie, and that's not a horror story.
No.
So anyway, the movie was The Uninvited, which in the 1940s was a movie with Ray Milland, and it dealt with a haunted house at the edge of a cliff in England, and a song was written for the movie that became so haunting to people around the world that even though it was only a theme, they had to quickly write words to it, and the song is called Stella by Starlight. So those of you listening in, if you ever hear a singer, whether it's a rock or ballad, what have you, sing Stella by Starlight, it's really a love song to a ghost. Most people don't know it unless they've seen the movie.
Mm-hmm.
So I played this piece on the piano. And of course, the audience wondered, what the heck is this? And Creston flipped out. He's got people standing on stage looking at the audience. I'm playing the piano.
Uh-huh.
And when I finished, I walked over to the group. And one of the men there was the producer from, I don't know if you're from Hannity and Combs, they're on Fox News.
Oh, yes.
Or what have you.
Mm-hmm.
Alan Combs is his producer. And I didn't know he was one of the volunteers on stage. But the next night, they had me on Fox News because the producer was there who proceeded to explain. Because Alan said, well, were you frightened? He says, I could not move. He said it was impossible to move any limb of my body. I was so paralyzed. He said one woman next to me grabbed me so hard. He said the pain was excruciating. He said she must have been feared out of her mind. Another gentleman, an elderly man, described looking at the balcony of the theater, which was, of course, dimly lit, but there was a door open, a rear exit door, and he said he counted 18 ghosts walking out of that door in the entire time that I played the he was shaking. But what was incredibly dramatic was two of the women were so terrified they ran from the center of the stage to the back to the drapes and wrapped themselves in drapes, and we could not get them out for 20 minutes.
Oh, my God.
So each person, what I had done in borrowing from Alfred Hitchcock and a man that I knew pretty well, Orson Welles,
mm-hmm.
was I used a person's inner mind to find what was most frightening, and I brought it out because every one of them said they had never been so terrified in their life. So Anytime you want to talk about ghosts, guys, I'm here.
Well, one of the things that Scott L. says a lot is because of the mind and because of the power of the mind, some people who take up ghost hunting or this kind of hobby, they go, well, I want to see a ghost. I want to see a ghost. And Scott says, look, if all you want to do is see a ghost, right?
I'll show you one.
I can show you a ghost.
Sure.
I'll take you out. You'll be so scared. You'll see ghosts. You'll see everything.
Sure.
You know.
Sure. And we know as kids walking through the forest at night.
Mm-hmm.
You know.
And the shadows and the creepiness and everything, yeah. It just builds up and in your mind, and then
you see
everything.
That's a good example, Doug. I mean, and that's the idea. I tell people that, you know, hey, look, I'll tell you, you want to see ghosts, we'll see ghosts. Well, I'll put you in a car, we'll drive to an area, and on the way to the area, and you'll know what I'm talking about here, Kreskin, on the way to the area we're going to investigate, I'm going to go, okay, this is what happened to this house. A man came in there and slashed 14,000 people. He wrote his name in blood all over the wall. And now all of a sudden the guy runs around there supposedly you can see him running around, his ghostly figure, wheeling an axe and chasing people down the hallway. That right there enough for somebody who's never been out there for the first time. Or who's been out there for the first time.
When they're walking in the hallway and it's dimly lit.
That's a mind melt. That's a mind melt right there for them, right?
Yeah.
But you're absolutely right. It shows, because we're all sensitive individuals and we're all receptive to ideas. At the same time, it is always interesting that the most sensitive people on the other side of the coin, whether they've been mediums or psychics or what have you, are artistic individuals because of the ability to feel ideas and to have feelings while a person who may look at something totally in a cold, you know, you might say, I hate to use the word scientific because that's a play on words because, you know, some certainly paranormal research can be done scientifically,
mm-hmm.
but you sometimes have to use a different barometer because it doesn't weigh like, you know, 2 and 2 being 4.
Mm-hmm.
And a person who doesn't understand that can't necessarily understand the other. And that doesn't mean, as you guys I'm sure have discussed, doesn't mean it doesn't exist. So there are both sides to it. People, mm-hmm. you know, years ago there was a wonderful, oh my God, she was a legendary woman. Her name was Dr. Margaret Mead, and she was a very prominent anthropologist. And she, when I was a kid, guys, and any issue, whether it was a war, an earthquake, a calamity, she would be on the next day to discuss because she was a anthropologist, sociologist. She had traveled the world. The last time I saw her, she was. She had come to my show in New York State with about 60, 70 students, and there was about 3,000 people. But she was in the front row, and then we sat up at night. We sat up in a hotel room, just she and I, till 6 in the morning. Then she suddenly said, oh, my God, Kreskin, I got to leave. I'm checking out NASA, the National Aeronautics Space Administration. I said, my God, I'm leaving in 2 hours because I had a show at a university. I forget what part of the country it was. But her mind was searching. She lived with the Pygmies. She lived in Africa, and she was very much interested in the paranormal and in shamans, what some would call witch doctors or whatever you want to call them, because she saw an underlying phenomena that she felt was legitimate that existed around the world, some of it primitive and some of it very, very modern. But she did not want me. She argued with me one night, I'll never forget this. She didn't want me to call myself a mentalist. She wanted me to call myself a sensitive. And Scott and Doug, as you perhaps know, before the 20th century in the old countries, people who were highly gifted or intuitive were called sensitive. It was a very common term.
Yes.
They didn't use the term medium. They didn't use what have you. It was called a sensitive. But as I said to Dr. Mead, if I use that term today, if people come to the theater, I have to spend a half an hour telling them what the heck that meant before I could go on my show. So, you know, I never took her advice on that. But she was fascinated. She had studied trances in Bali, and she found my demonstrations of telepathic phenomena so intriguing. And she talked to students about it. And incidentally, I got this image of her. She comes to my show, and there's... this is in Chautauqua, which is a famous outdoor theater in New York State. And there she's sitting in the front row. Now, she has a staff. The staff is about, oh, I kid you not, six feet long, something like that. And she just walked around with it. It turns out that when she was in Africa, One of the pygmy tribes gave it to her as a gift. I said, Dr. Mina, I could never get an argument with you. You'd probably level that and make it horizontal with the floor and aim it at me. So let's just talk and be civil about it. But she was fascinating. And you'd have her on. If she were alive, you'd have her on, guys.